Let's make a circle. I'm going to use this two maps. A little bit further, and I need these two maps. And this is going to take me some time. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put together Old Testament, but actually till 732 BC. And also I'm going to put together what we've done in Hazor, what we've done in Dan, and use the model here. Children, get in. Come on.
There you go. Way to go.
Yes.
She's just kidding.
Yeah, I'm not trying to give you any. So we're going to use the model of Megiddo. And if you take any tell, and now you know what a tell is, Mount First Time Use Hazor, from Dan to Beersheba. At that time, which Iron Age, and I'm coming while you call it Iron Age, in a moment you will see it almost identical to this one, from Dan to Beersheba. And there's no way I can do that unless we talk about the Middle East. We already said that we have two major river source of water. One is the Nile, and the Euphrates right here. There's one thing that I want to show you, which is very important. And now, by the way, I think they launched 4 days ago a satellite that will give us better weather from Florida, right? So that is great. And what I wanted, the reason I'm talking about the weather and the location of the Middle East had a lot to do with what happened here. And this is what we have here. This is the meeting point of three continents. We have Europe, Asia, and Africa. And what happened is, if you take the blob, you know how the winds go. We all went to school. You know, the wind goes this way and then that way, this way and that way. Okay, the area here, the wind goes from west to east. And that is very important. So if the wind goes west to east, what we have to draw a line is take the wind, go this way, over the Mediterranean, this is where we get to rain, right? Beyond that, it's a desert. We call it the Sahara Desert. And I'm afraid to say that even here we have desert because the moisted air goes up the mountain and it goes up, it gets cool, we get rain. So we call this part rain, the rainy area, fertile land. And then it descends down after losing moisture 2,700 to 3,000 feet. It descends down either to Sea of Galilee, 700 feet below sea level, or the Dead Sea, which is 1,300 feet below sea level. So all the area here on the east is in the rain shadow. It's not a desert. It's a rain shadow. You do get rain of 100 millimeter, 150 millimeter. So you find nomadic people in this area. And that is important, and we'll talk about it when we go to Masada, you'll see it very well. So if you see that the rain goes this way, and our concern now is mainly this part, which is called from Dan to Beersheba or to the Red Sea, you will see that the place that you actually get rain is right here. Am I right? Just the line, take the line. Right here, which means if I do get rain here, the last place I will find well for water, aquifer, is right here. And what do we call this place? Be'er Sheva. Be'er is a well. You remember the story of Abraham at the well of Beersheba. They were arguing about the water. So anything from here further down, there's no permanent source of water except oasis. And that's why the land is from Dan to Beersheba. I cannot have anything beyond that because it's too dry. What is so special because of the wind here? Do you know that the Egyptians were the first one who knew how to sail? Can you imagine how important it is? If I can sail, I can use the Nile round-trip ticket and not one-way ticket as it was right here. From here, the water goes down to the area of Iran or Persia today, and you use the boat one way, and then you pull them up with camels and ropes. And that's why they will be the first one to create a wheel. They will be the first one to create a chariot, but all that. But they did it with no iron. So, and that's why it was a solid piece of wood that went like this. This is one. The other thing that I want to point out to you, here we have the Dead Sea. And the Dead Sea is an obstacle. I cannot cross the Dead Sea. So what do? The first time I cross is right here, right? You see, first we'll look at the place and then we give name. And the name that we know, Jaffa, Jerusalem, Jericho, Amman, Jordan. And now you know why all these cities are right here. The first crossing point coming from the south, coming from Egypt. But you had to go from sea level to 2,700 feet above sea level, to 1,300 feet below sea level, to 3,000 feet above sea level, in 60 miles, and no Rami and Mercedes-Benz bus to take you. So it wasn't so easy. So you will look always for an area that is kind of flat plateau, so you can cross with all your army goods or whatever. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about Egypt. The moment we have the river, and the leader tells you, let's make tunnels, irrigation, or what else, he become a god. And on top of that, he doesn't want to use labor from his own people. He invade this area every 7 years. And that's why we don't have one nation here. We have many, I mentioned it already, and we call it the land of Canaan. But not only that. In the ancient time, and even around Sea of Galilee, transportation was not done in land, it was done along the water. And it's very scary to be in water, in a blue boat, in the Mediterranean at night. So what do? Traveling in those days, either by sea or by land, 15 miles a day, 15 miles a day. So what you do is, you take every 15 miles, you build a little seaport, but it's a tiny little thing. It's not a big for sheep or anything. That came later. So, and then you had to make a road that will connect all these seaports. That is Via Maris, the road along the sea. It's not just, let's make a road. They made a road to retain all these little seaports that were built here, and that would be the crossing point. But some of the goods, yes, were carried like that, but the most precious goods were, by the way, we have evidence of trade between King Solomon and Queen of Sheba, things that were found recently. It's not only the wall of Solomon that was found. Well, what would be the most precious, precious thing that were traded in those days? Spices. In the Far East, it's Silk Road or spices. And spices, there's no way you can take it along the sea. You had to take it inland in a dry climate. So this is the spice route, right here. Right? Look at that. Right here, avoiding the Sinai, the Red Sea here, and the Red Sea here. And how did it work? Each tribe had its own area. Not one chariot or caravan went from one end to the other. The goods went and exchanged. There's one tribe here, they give me the goods here, I take the goods here, put it here. And those meeting points became very important. It's a place of trade, exchange of culture. I better have a holy place there. I better have all kinds of services there. And usually they will grow if it was a crossing point with other roads that went north to south. One of them is very famous, Petra of Jordan. Petra of Jordan is on the spice route. The strength, the power of the Nabatean was that they were nomadic people. The moment they put themselves and started to build the city of Petra, that was their weakness. The strength of the nomadic people is that there's a problem. They move out and they have nothing to lose. How many empires were here? Rome, Hellenistic, Byzantine, Crusades, Napoleon came and left. And the Bedouins are the only one that were here even before the time of Abraham, even though we don't want to think about it, but this is the truth. So this is a little bit about the land. So here you can see very clear what we're talking about, the land, the plain of Sharon. During the Old Testament, they tried to get to the area of Damascus as quick as possible. So the first crossing point, Ta'anak, a lot of fighting was there mentioned in the Bible, Megiddo, they both meet together at the foot of Mount Tabor. From the foot of Mount Tabor to the south part of Sea of Galilee, and they had two, they split. One went from the south of Sea of Galilee, one went from Bethsaida, you remember we drove north where the river drove, and then to Qunetra, and the same road we saw from the mountain Bental, that was the road to Damascus. The moment Herod built Caesarea further to the north, I would prefer to do better on the flat area and then to go up and down. You go up here to a place called Yokneam, to Tzipori, north of Nazareth, to the Valley of the Wind, to Magdala, to Capernaum, to Bethsaida, to Qunetra, to Damascus. And these are not just names for you. You know these places. Now we come to the material that was used in those days. The first thing we're talking about is the stone. Stone Age, and we said Syrian African Rift and also the foot of Mount Carmel, we have evidence of that. Beginning of a fire, and you know the evolution. Our body changed the moment there was a fire, because the moment there's a fire, till there was a fire, they almost had to go on four legs, you can say. But the moment you free your hands, your whole body changed. It didn't change too well, because that's why we suffer from our lower part of the back. But it changed. So the moment you have a fire, you can protect yourself. You don't need to wander. You don't need to move around. And we have right here along the Jordan Valley, in the foot of Mount Carmel, beginning of settling permanently in one place. If you do so, so you start to have agriculture, you start to take animals and keep them to yourself and so forth. And then we have the pottery. So you come to a place which has had pre-pottery and pottery, like at the south part of Sea of Galilee. I'm going to leave that for now. What happened? The moment time of Abraham come, he brings team. I know I said some of these things, but what I'm doing, I'm putting this all in order. Abraham come from here, he brings tin. From Kypros, we get copper. Take tin and bronze, you get tin and copper. Correct? Tin and copper, we get bronze. And the Bronze Age, do you think it could be for a long period of time? Not at all. East and West doesn't get well together, so it's a very short time. So that is the time around Abraham. And during the time of Abraham, the climate was different than it is today. The area of the Dead Sea and the area of the Jordan Valley was like a jungle. And that's why when Abraham came with Lot, he said to him, which part of the land is you want? And he says, I want, he's here in Bethel. We know exactly. Said, this is so green, I want this. But during the time, Second Temple period, and today, it's exactly the same climate as today. And then we have those people who came from here, and they introduced this area to the secret material, which is iron. And I'm not going to tell you, and I'm not going to give you the secret, the power of iron. And that's what the Philistines, that's what they did. They kept it to themselves. No different than nuclear today. Nuclear can be used as a tool, medicine, and so forth. But nuclear can be used as weapon. Iron, how can you have anything here? Everything is made of stone. How can you plow, how can you work in the fields if you don't have iron? How can you cut the stones to do these capitals and building? And more than that, how can I reach to the water? Because if I live in the mountain, Where is my source of water? Down in the valley, which the enemy has the water. I have to build a water tower, and I have to build a wall around it. It doesn't work. David got into Jerusalem this way. So what? Water tunnel. Wherever you see a water tunnel, you know it's a first temple period. And to do that, I need iron. So all this is iron. And the story, if you really want to know how it happens, you go to the story of David. Jesse sent his son, go to the Philistines and fix the tools, right? And he goes all the way from Bethlehem to the Philistines right here. Wasn't an easy way, right? All the way here. But what happened is, because David conquered this area, which is in the south, and right here we have copper and iron mines. And Solomon, called Solomon Mines, and what happened is, because the mountain go very high in the Negev Desert, very high in the mountains of Edom, and that western wind hit the mountain and go down this way, okay, it goes like that, it brings wind from north to south. We said Solomon was pretty smart, and he built fire that was built like this, okay? That's in Elat, it's Yon Gavr. Some of you are going to Egypt, you're going to be there. So the wind goes like this. What happened? The wind goes like this, and it brings oxygen to the fire. And you can reach to thousands of Celsius degrees. You can work on the iron, and you can work on the copper. You have tools. And the Philistine lost the secret weapon. Do we hear of them after that? No, they're gone. The end of the Philistines period, and that is exactly 3,000 years ago. So when we think about it, this is called time of Abraham to beginning of Joshua. We call it the bronze period. From Joshua, we started to hear of the Philistines. They brought iron, so it's the Iron Age. If you want to sound sophisticated, check the period. Early, middle, late, early Bronze Age, middle Bronze Age, late Bronze Age, sounds good. So we know, we said, Chalcolithic, just before Bronze Age, what comes after, time Joshua and so on, Iron Age, David, Solomon, the first temple period, then we have Persian, after Persian, Hellenistic, then Roman, then Byzantine, then Islamic, then Crusades, then Turkish Mandate, Israel. I gave you this because that will lead us to the next place we go to, Caesarea. Let's see the model and talk about that. Ionic, this is the replica. It's similar to the Ionic, right? But it's with a triangle in the center. So you have all capitals in the world right now. Now, as we said, notice that Solomon built those administration centers to collect money. None of them are in the land argued that because it is a tax on its own people. All of them in the north, from Dan, we saw Dan, but the administration center was Tuxer. And I'm so glad you went there, John. I think this is one of the highlights of excavation first couple period. Megiddo and Gezer. Gezer, they started to excavate it back again, but it's no systematic excavation. Even though very interesting things were found there, we're passing by there, I will mention it to you. Here, try to think, I'm building King Solomon and his sons after. I'm building an administration center. What should I have? First of all, I have to very well fortify it. And that's why it was surrounded with wall. The wall was a double wall with rooms in between to accommodate. And it says what it's called, and what I'm using are archaeological terminology that you would find in sophisticated universities books. Inset, offset. What does it mean? In and out. Like you see here. Of course, if a soldier stands in a corner, he can see if somebody is trying to do what? Either take the lower part of the wall down or to knock off the wall. This was not enough. They needed glacis. Glacis was used later, but the slope of the mountain was glacis, so you can see if anybody is trying to climb up. We already mentioned how many gates were they? One. Very good. Only one. More gates, harder to protect. And the gate has more function. We talked about it before. Meeting point, court, the king was there, the priest was there, the elderly people were there. And as we saw in Hatzor, two towers, it was in a lot better shape there. Two towers, three rooms, so six altogether. You don't open this gate every day, so you had a little staircase leading up to. Then what do we see? Here, in this place, you see both storage, like we saw there, but we see a lot of stables here. Pillars, and in between the pillars, manger. What are the manger made of? Stone manger. There to the left hand side is the holy place. Then when they did the excavation, hard to believe, they cut it off. And they found underneath an altar. In a way, it was very interesting because that altar, round shape, pile of stone, this is the same kind of altar that was on Mount Moriah when Abraham brought Isaac and put him on the altar. That's one. We saw a palace, right? Gilani Palace. The palace was taken off to see the layer underneath. Here is where they train the chariots and the horses back there. And on this section there, you see the four rune style, which you saw one that was restored with the oil press so well. So just with an aerial shot, just from the air, I can see a round place, I can see a gate, I can see this, we can pinpoint the time. And we didn't go in Hatzor, but here, yes, we will, the water. The mountain, the water is outside. Where, how do I get the water? Before they have the iron, which means the Jebusite city, towards the time of David already had iron, they made a shaft down, and from the spring outside, they follow the flow of the water. They were very sensitive to the flow of the water. Some places they tried, wrong place. When we go out to see three different places that they try, and you go down to the clay. You have aquifer and aquiclou. You come down to the clay and you follow in a line till you meet the shaft that you've made. And then you seal it, because if you're not careful, your enemy can use it to sneak into the city. And that's exactly how David got to Jerusalem. So this is the water tunnel right here. How can people pay tax here? What did they have? Grain. So you see a grain silo in the center. Because of this and the way Solomon treated the northern kingdom, it didn't take long and they split to two.
We're going to see the movie now.
This way. Look at the round altar that I mentioned.
From the 21st century, Del Megiddo takes us back to the dawn of human history. People first settled here 7,000 years ago, building their home in caves in the bedrock. Since then, for thousands of years, a central city existed here continually, experiencing all types of historic reversals. The city of Megiddo was destroyed 25 times by waves of conquerors, which surged over it and rebuilt it 25 times. The city's remains are found on the site's 25 levels, an eternal memorial to humanity's will to exist and an everlasting witness to the war and destruction accompanying human history. Perhaps that is the reason why Megiddo was chosen to serve as an eternal symbol of hope for the future. According to Christian tradition, right here, the most important battle for man will take place in the last of days, the final battle. In the New Testament, the Apostle John predicts that at Megiddo, or as it is also known, Armageddon, the final battle to end all destruction and persecution will take place. The cruel wars which took place here during the thousands of years resulted from Megiddo's unique strategic location. It controls the most important part of the road running along the coast called Via Maris by the Romans, leading from Egypt in the south to Mesopotamia in the north. Whoever controlled the city controlled this central artery. Canaanite, Egyptian, Assyrian, Babylonian, Persian, and of course the kings of Israel led by Solomon and Ahab all fought over it and over the city, and they all left memorials to their power and glory in Megiddo. The city of Megiddo knew not only wars, but cultural and spiritual development and the eternal longing of man for God. A prayer structure was discovered in the city from the Canaanite period, dating back to the year 5000 BCE. The people of the city prayed continually for thousands of years in the very same spot. 17 holy structures were built one on top of the other during various periods. The most impressive is a large round altar built of unhewn stone dated 2700 BCE. The city's name, Megiddo, appears in early written material from the 15th century BCE in documents of the Egyptian pharaoh Thutmose III, describing his military campaigns and conquests in the land of Israel. In a letter found at Tel El Amarna, dated in the 14th century BCE, the governor of Megiddo, Biridia, writes to his Egyptian king, "I have heard the words of my king, my lord, my son, and I shall defend Megiddo, city of kings, day and night." A beautiful treasure of ivory pieces was found in one of the rooms in Biridia's palace, not far from the gate of the walled city. Thank you. Israelites reached Canaan after 40 years of wandering in the desert. After a quick conquest, Megiddo fell and became a part of the lands of the tribe of Manasseh. King David conquered the city at its 16th level, which had been built on the ruins of 15 previous layers. The city reached the height of its glory in the period of the Israelite kings, Solomon and Ahab. This was the best fortified of all cities built by King Ahab, and he chose it to be one of the three seats of government in his kingdom. He continued to develop and build the city. Proof of this remains to this day. The great city gates, the most beautiful ever discovered. Two stables for 450 of his horses. Two palaces, in one of which lived the governor appointed by the king. The public greenery, from which food for all the citizens was distributed. There were two sets of stairs, one for going up and one for going down. The arched roof that protected the grains from sun and rain caved in during the course of the years. The most impressive discovery, its sophistication and construction technique astounding to this day, is the waterworks built for the city by King Ahab. The city had a real problem. Its great walls protected it during siege, but its water sources were in a cave at the foot of the hill outside the walls. How would they get drinking water while the enemy besieged the city? The solution was obtained by means of complicated but effective technology. Inside the city, a shaft was dug. From its bottom, a horizontal tunnel, 30 meters long, was excavated in the direction of the spring and at the same height. From now on, the citizens of the city could utilize the water that flowed outside the city without leaving the safety of the walls. In order to conceal and to protect the water from enemies, the external entrance to the cave was blocked up and the wall camouflaged with rock and sand. Many kingdoms came and went in Megiddo. The kingdom of Israel was conquered by Assyria, and after them came the Persians. In the 4th century BCE, Megiddo was abandoned and never resettled. All that is left are the remains of 4,000 years of human settlement and the apocalyptic prophecies, mainly Christian, which have memorialized its name in human culture as the arena of the great battle in the last of days. That is why the historic meeting between the President of Israel and Pope Paul VI took place in 1964 here at Megiddo, known as Armageddon. For 2,000 years, not only Megiddo lay in ruins, but also the entire area. Two more battles took place here in this century. The British General Allenby routed the Turkish army at the end of World War I. The British reinforced their rule in the country, and General Allenby was named Lord of Armageddon. Years ago, the valley surrounding the city, called the Jezreel Valley, was brought back to life when Jewish pioneers returned to revive the land. They built cities and kibbutzim round the remains of the past. During Israel's War of Independence in 1948, more battles took place here, which ended with the defeat of the Arab forces. At the end of the war, a kibbutz settled at the edge of the Tell, which took the historic name of the city, Megiddo. Its founders were survivors of the Holocaust, who had come to find a new future alongside the historic remains. In the vicinity of the Tell, there are other interesting sites to visit, all under the auspices of the National Parks Authority, which is also responsible for Tel Megiddo. Beit Shaarim and its archaeological discoveries. The synagogue found at Beit Alpha with its unique mosaic floor. The antiquities at Beit Shaan now being excavated. Mayan Chavod. And Gan HaShlosha. The National Parks Authorities wishes you a pleasant tour.
Anyone who wants to go with Tommy, I'll show you where it is. And the rest of us are going to go through the excavation. If you start, you have to do the whole thing because the bus meets us on another place.
Where is Nabi going?
Rami, if you don't want to go through the excavation, Rami, pray.
We got to talk.
Yeah. Okay, anyone who's going to go with Rami this way, anyone who goes from the excavation this way. By now. You can see, of course, this is for people to walk into the city kind of daily use. This part of the gate goes back to the time of Solomon, which means 3,000 years. Joachim and the king of Megiddo. And this goes back to the 14th century BC. And this part of the gate is the gate that Joshua tried to conquer and failed to conquer. Not like in Hazor that he conquered and burned down to the ground. And all these stones that you see here, and then they have dirt on top of it. And as you can see, the stone here is so similar to that in Hazor, but they use also wood. This is a replica that actually retained it because it was so, they didn't have iron. So they had so hard to make stones cut the way you see them now. But actually this is under the Israelite gate. To see this, the strip of King Solomon and Ahab gate, to see what you have right here.
I'm sure the techniques have changed radically.
Well, I mean, part of the problem is Wouldn't you think that if you take apart a couple of Canaanite sites from 2500 BC, they probably, one looks a whole lot like the next one. And then, I don't know, to me, it sounds like an academic thing. Oh, let's see what's underneath. As opposed to something remotely practical, which is, this is a tourist trap.
That's all part of it.
They just took it off. I mean, look, all of those big